2013. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Edie could take a roll call, please.
Councilperson Jerry.
Here.
Cutterback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble. Hanford.
Here.
Student Representative Toronto.
Councilmember Gamble, did you make a call? Let me know that he is on Highway 522, causing some traffic. He's on his way. I was being told by Dave that Adams Brewery, but he should be here momentarily. So please join me for the pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First point of order this evening is a public hearing on the formation of the local improvement district, LID, for 157 Clay Southeast. And this is, all is ashore, my computer's not up.
Diane,
I'm sorry. I saw sewer and I thought, oh, or Jake, I want to see.
I just want to quick give an introduction. Local improvement districts, also known as LIDs, can be formed in two ways. One is by council resolution method, and the other is by petition method. And the city received a petition from citizens who live on 137 Place saying that, yes, they would like to petition for an LID reform to go from septic to sewer. When they signed the petition, they did not know the cost. That's the way the process works. So they signed, said yes, they want it, but they didn't know the cost at that time. Once we get it, then we do an engineer's estimate and everything. And the cost comes out. I sent a letter to each of the property owners saying it would be about $28,000 per property. However, there's been a revision since then in the engineer's estimate. It's now $34,000 per property. This just gives them the sewer main down their street to actually then to connect to it. They would also have to pay the capital connection fee of $6,777. There's also an RCW that says that the actual assessments cannot exceed a figure equal to the increased true and fair value of the improvement. So the value, I'm thinking the value of the improvement is not, the property value is not $34,000. I think it's much less. So that would mean, I'm guessing, that the city would have to absorb the additional costs. Like, we could only assess the property for what the fair value is that it increased their property value by. Am I making sense when I say that? No?
Do you actually have a figure on how much less it would be?
I don't know. I would have to hire an. We would, part of the LID process is we would hire an appraiser to say what the benefit is to the property. My guess, off the top of my head, would be about $10,000.
Reduction.
If improvement to the property.
Oh, okay. I see.
And the assessment would be about $34,000, which means the city would have to
keep the $25,000.
Right. Okay. That's what.
Each, you know, $24,000 per property. So there's about 15 properties in sellers. So this is a hearing, this is a chance. Now that, you know, the property owners have received the letter saying how much we're guessing it's gonna cost, if they don't object, we can assess them the full amount. If they object, we can only assess them what the benefit is to their property. So this is now, the purpose of this public hearing is for the citizens to, the property owners to speak up and say, you know, what they feel and what they would like council to do. And that's my introduction.
All right, thank you. So at this time, we will open up the public testimony portion of the public hearing. And I do have a number of individuals who've signed up this evening for the to speak on the public hearing.
with regards to the formation of local improvement district. I understand that there are some who signed up who would prefer not to stand at the podium, and that's quite all right. You can certainly share your comments from your seats.
I can give that one.
And I was just going to ask if that would be possible. So I apologize here. Velma Smith. And if you would, we appreciate your name and address for the record.
Okay.
And please limit your time to 5 minutes.
Well, it's going to be much shorter than my name is Velma Smith, and I live on at 157th Place. And I am retired. Retired in 1995, and there is no way I can afford that amount of money to put a sewer in my on my property, and so on. Hope you will vote no.
Thank you. Thank you. Alan Smith.
Good evening. My mother neglected to yield the balance of her time. I'm not a Monroe resident. I live in Snohomish. But I'm here to speak on my mother's behalf. First of all, I want to thank you for providing this opportunity to address the council. And I also want to express our appreciation to your finance director, Diane Nelson, for taking the time to meet with us, to answer our questions, and to provide us with documents. You have a very citizen-friendly finance director, and we appreciate that. I have 3 points or concerns I wanted to raise with you. The first is my mother said she is senior, living on a fixed income of a Methodist preacher's modest pension and Social Security. Her mortgage is paid. She has a second mortgage or home improvement loan. She's able to make interest-only payments on that, $70 a month. A sudden new payment over 10 years of $300, $400 a month would be extremely difficult for her. So I just wanted to stress her financial circumstances. And my second point is that this is a very unusual petition. As you know, the statute provides that the city council can, that a petition can be initiated by a majority of the property owners within the proposed LID district. And the petition is signed by some 11 out of 14 homeowners in the proposed area. But we've been talking among ourselves in the neighborhood, and we count something like 7, 8, or 9 households that are against it. And I think as many as 7 or 8 of those households may be represented here tonight. And I hope that they will stand up and be recognized and express their views. How could the petition have so many signatures with such little real support? I'm not sure. I think it's because people were signing because they didn't know what they were signing, either because of language barriers, or because they didn't realize that an assessment is something that you have to pay, or how big the assessment was going to be, the scope of the project, how many households would be involved. So there was just confusion, and some people did sign the petition, who today probably wish they had not. My mother was not one of them. She's too short. My third point, as Diane mentioned, and I appreciate her bringing this up, the statute governing both the petition method and the resolution method requires that while the actual assessment may vary from the estimates, which are ranging from 28 to 34,000, the final actual assessment cannot exceed the value added to the property. So if we say that the added the assessment cost is going to be 30,000, these are modest homes on this street. It's hard for me to believe that connecting to sewer, as desirable as that would be, by the way, would add $30,000 value to these properties. And I realize that and appreciate that you're here to listen and not answer legal or financial questions. I don't know what happens if the actual assessment exceeds the property value, where that leaves us, but I hope that's an issue that you would take up and consider in your deliberations and perhaps with your discussion with City Council, that is, City Legal Council. You are the City Council. I think that those are the three points I wanted to make, but I need to check with my mother to make sure that I said everything she told me to say. Mom, did that pretty much sum it up?
You did good.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm right on time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's Willie. I'm just going to go with Willie. I'm sorry.
He's calling your name.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was just saying, I could stay there. And I've been there 57 years.
Everybody be able to hear you a lot better if you're standing in there.
Anyway, did you hear what I said?
No.
You start over, it'd be great, because you didn't really get there.
Okay. I have lived there for still 50 some years, and I'm not ready to move, and that's what would happen this morning. So, that's, you know, that says a lot. So is there anything else you want me to tell me?
Actually, well, your name and your name and your address would be great.
So I was thinking, I don't know anything about this. Oh. My name is Willie Albury.
And the address, your street address.
Okay, and my address is 15701 157th Place Southeast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pardon?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not at all.
Am I okay?
You're great. Right. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well done.
I couldn't tell. I didn't care about it. And I was twisting my ears.
Now unplug it. We'll be all right. Maria Chavez?
Hello, my name is Maria Chavez. My address is 17804 157th Place. I'm representing my dad, too. He doesn't speak English, but we won't be able to afford to pay that much money for the store because I work as a housemaid, and he works in a company where he makes frames for the windows and the doors, and it will be very hard for us to get that much money. Even if we have to pay in payments, it will be hard. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Maria, I have your father, I believe, signed up, but he will not be speaking, just
he
you,
does,
yourself?
Yeah, he doesn't speak English at all.
No, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. John
Har.
Hi, I'm John Har. Address is 17802 157th Place. I'm representing my wife, Rita. And we were approached by Mr. Reno last spring. And we spoke to him in our living room for a good half an hour or whatever. And he had the partition that we talked about, but at the time, my memory I don't remember anything about sewers. Rita and I referred that we were discussing speed limit signs, kids playing in the street. We have a handicapped child next door to us in a wheelchair. And it was that type of, that was the subject that, as I remember, I've done sewers all my life and underground utilities and all, and my septic tank works great. The financial burden on our home, that was underwater in my place. There's no way I could afford any other financial burden. And I'm sure the rest of the people in the neighborhood, the scientists, had no really clue on as far as the economical expenses and what it really entailed. And also, I heard that some of the people, the scientists, don't even live within those lots. I understand there's two parties that have left the area. That would make that petition void or whatever. But I'm the first one to sign it. I'm the first one I'd like to have my name taken off.
Thank you. Mrs. Hart, would you like to say anything? Or?
Do you want to say anything?
No, he's already talked for me.
Okay, very good. I'm sorry. I thought you'd come in that way.
No, he's talking for me.
All right. Jose Alfredo?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Hi.
Hello.
My name is Jose Alfredo, and I live in 17712-157 Play Chaldee. And I don't speak a lot of English, just a little bit. And that's the same problem. You know, we don't have any money now for the school. But we have good money. And yes, no, I don't have the money now for that. And that's all I can say. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James.
Good job.
Justin Barnsdale.
Hello, Justin Barksdale. I live at 17806, 157 Place Southeast. I had to leave the Sky Valley T-ball game to come here tonight. I also pastor Monroe Church of the Nazarene on Main Street. And as my neighbors have already shared their sentiments, the financial burden of bringing this in would be a lot for my family of four. I'm sure you would appreciate all of us spending a couple hundred dollars on Main Street instead of this sewer improvement that really doesn't add a whole lot of value to our properties. So thank you for considering.
Thank you.
Drew B, I think it is.
Drew Bright, yeah. Yeah, I am actually a father of twins now at this point. I can't afford this. My wife stays at home, and I'm the only one bringing in the income, and it just can't happen. So I appreciate it.
And
your address,
real quick? Oh, I'm sorry. No, 17706.
And if your last name again?
Brian. Bryan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard O. O'Hearn, there it is.
Richard O'Hearn at 17704 157 Place Southeast. A couple things on this is I did talk to Mr. Reno when he came around. I didn't sign the petition. I knew that would be eventually come to this of some sort. And I don't understand how one person could bring something around and then cause all this when nobody, as it turns out, Mr. Hart explained that really the majority of the people that I went on Sunday, the majority of the people don't want this. You know, we don't have the need for it. First of all, we don't have the expense. Everybody's on a fixed income. Nobody has accessible money that they can just draw from and pay extra utility bills. When I got to talk to some of my neighbors there, it was quite an experience, especially Phil, and she's pretty excited about this, and it would really hurt our housing and our lifestyle and our way of life. And everybody, you know, my neighbors printed up some things about housing costs and property values, and it's in the toilet. I mean, we don't want to pay for it and be in the toilet. So we've got some problems, and I really don't want this to go through. And I don't know if it's just a preliminary deal or if it's going to go, and we just sound like the first thing she was talking about was going to be how much we're going to pay, not if we're going to have it at all. Hopefully that's not that case. You know, I think, you know, I don't see the people that wanted it here. So I don't know if there's anybody that's for that or not. So I would just,
I think I speak for most majority of people here that please do not, we don't need it, and we're fine, our systems work fine. If people have problems, just like Drew had a problem, he had to redo his whole system. You know, other people on that block, they deal with it, and they get, you know, they had the pumpers come out, I had mine pumped, you know, maintenance programs, you know, they don't pollute, you know, septic systems work great. You know, they're just, you know, we tear up the streets, we'd have that, you know, that problem, we just have, it would bring a lot of issues that we don't want to deal with. So please consider that and not do it, and I wish that Mr. Reno wouldn't have started this whole process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Victoria Strand.
Hi, I'm Victoria Strand. I live at 17805 West 57th Place Southeast, next to Velma. Anyway, I'm a little bit concerned and upset because when they came around to sign for this petition for the first time, and it's been around twice or three times, and I didn't sign it the first time. The second time it came around, I said, my system works fine. Vince and Velma had just replaced theirs. I knew, you know, Mina is on a fixed income. I knew that this was not viable for most of my neighbors. But he said, you know, I don't know, what does it say in my forehead? He said, all we have to do is sign a petition. It's not going to do anything. We just need to find out how much it costs. Well, that's not the case, I'm finding. So this can't really go forward. It will not increase the value of the homes as much. And given a local, county, city, state, federal government, I know nobody has extra money. So you guys aren't going to take that extra $20,000, $25,000. In addition to the hookup fees, which nobody's talking about here yet, in addition to the side sewers, we're all going to have to run in. And if I have to run at 60 feet from the street, that's $4,000 or $5,000, easy. To put a side sewer in. Nobody's talking about that. So nobody can afford this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Ellsprin.
John Ellsprin, 17632, 157th Place Southeast. Basically just going to echo everything that my neighbors have been saying, that it's just not financially prudent at this time. The cost-benefit analysis just isn't there. The cost of installing the sewer does not equal the benefit of, you know, for even having your septic tank pumped, or the relatively, even if there is complete utter collapse, is rather relatively cheap to mediate as compared to installing the sewer at this point in time. And then, taking advantage of the Snohomish County Assessor's Office, I put in the numbers, and I have a handout here if you guys want to pass it, a couple of them if you want to hand pass it around. But between 2009 and the current, you know, the last tax year, that chunk of 15 parcels has lost $1.8 million in assessed property value combined. Each individual unit has lost all in the ballpark of $140,000. And so I'm not sure how any of my neighbors could even, you know, any bank's going to look at them and go, oh, hey, here's a loan so you can pay the city back over installments, or hey, here's a loan so you can pay back your taxes. And, you know, I don't want to see a whole bunch of foreclosed houses on my property from people who, and you know, these are all good people who don't want to be in debt, who don't want to run up a bill that they can't pay for. And really, that's what I hear them pleading. It's like, listen, we maybe come back to talk to us about 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road and we can help pay for it. But right now, if you install it, we won't be able to pay for it. And I just want to add that to the voices, you know, and be heard. And the gentleman that was coming around for signatures, once again, talk to me. I can't honestly remember if I signed it or not, but it was not pitched as, oh, hey, I'm looking to get this happen. It's, oh, I'm just looking for an estimate. I'm looking for a quick estimate. We'll come back to you with the numbers. This isn't going to go any further. I just want to talk to the city about an estimate.
And then about a year goes by, and it's like, hey, certified mail, you know, you might be on the hook for a bill for $40,000. And it's like, whoa, wait, where was the, you know, it's like walking to, you know, a car lot and going, oh, hey, here's your keys, and that's going to be, and it's like, whoa, I just asked you what the price was. Let's not say it. You know, there's a whole lot of discussion that has to go from point A to point B. So, but that's just basically my two cents, kind of just double checking that with my neighbors. Thank you all for hearing me out.
Thank you. That's all that I have who have signed up this evening to speak with regards to this local improvement district. But as always, if there's any individual in the audience this evening who had not signed up but would like to speak on this particular subject matter during the public hearing, you may do so. If you just might raise your hand. Okay, I think everybody who wanted to has spoken. Councilmember Hanford.
Make a motion to close the public hearing. Second.
Close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
Correct. Second.
All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Camp to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. If I may, just some clarification, direct the question to Diane. This evening, the purpose is twofold. One, to hear from the public with regards to the potential LID. And second, the direction that you're looking for from after council for discussion is whether to proceed or not to proceed. So no decision has been made.
Proceed with the formation of an LID.
That's correct. So I just wanted everybody to be sure that no decision has been made with regards to the formation. That's the purpose of this evening's public testimony or public hearing. So, Council, in?
I'm just curious, how long does it take to actually find out the decision?
You'll probably find out in about 5 minutes.
All right.
I just want people to be clear on that first. Yes, but thank you, Councilmember Gearing. So all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that was only to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Just for, I guess, direction for Diane, from what it sounds like, we have 10 people speak. I don't know if they all live in those addresses, but I'm guessing they do. They seem like honest people. 10 out of 14 seems like a majority opposed to it. So just from that, I don't know if there's any point of continuing this. What's the process, Diane? If there's a petition that already has enough signatures, is that just to bring it forward for discussion tonight and we can decide at this point whether to continue with it or not?
It's council's option whether to form an LID regardless of the petition. And so, you can decide not to form the LID.
Okay. And it sounds like we've thrown some numbers around. Nobody knows for sure what the assessed increase will be. But if we're using your estimates and it's $10,000, I didn't hear anybody in favor of paying $10,000. I know as a council member, I'm not in favor of the city paying $24,000 for the difference. So for me, it's a pretty easy decision. If we're needing a motion on it, I'd make a motion that we cease formation of the LID.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Williams and seconded by Councilmember Gamble to cease formation of the LID. Point of order. Do we need to close the public hearing first before?
I don't know.
You know what, Councilmember Gearing, Councilmember Williams, I'd ask that you rescind the motion. Let's close the public hearing first and then.
Motion to close the public hearing?
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Williams and seconded by Councilmember Camp to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Councilmember Williams.
Motion to cease the formation of the LID.
Second.
A motion has been made by Councilmember Williams and seconded by Councilmember Gamble to cease the formation of the LID. Any other comments or questions? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Right. It's no longer.
Thank you.
thank you to all those who spoke this evening. We appreciate you.
Thank you for attending.
Thank you.
We'll give 2 minutes, 2 minute recess in order for anyone who would like to leave the chambers at this time. You can do so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This portion of the meeting is set aside for comments from citizens. This is your opportunity to speak to City Council on any issue except any judicial matters subject to public hearing. I would ask that you please limit your time to 5 minutes and also provide your name and address for the record. I don't have anybody signed up at this time, but as I said earlier, if there's anyone in the audience who'd like to address council during this public comment portion of the agenda, you may do so at this time. Raise your hand.
Since it's on your agenda, I would request to talk now.
Yes. No.
So, my name is David Remlinger. I live at 12525 Old Stone, Monroe Road. What I'm talking about is the potential of including some property that I have in the comprehensive plan that the city would put forth in the county. My wife and I purchased the Meadowood property 2 years ago. It currently has 85 acres of the property that's in the R5 zone in the county. It's also the rural urban transition area. All this area is out in the floodplain. It's basically go past the Mormon Church of High School, make the hard right on Tester. It's that property there. When we acquired it, we do intend to convert a couple of buildings to event center. We have Lauderhill Farms, we already do events there. We'd have a winery there. We'd have a farm kitchen slash restaurant, guest cottages, and then build some residence on the upper portion, maybe through a cluster. It's already subdivided into 5 acre lots up above. So, you know, after looking at the property and talking to some other people in the city of Monroe, it does make some sense maybe to include that in the comprehensive plan, so it could be ultimately put in the UGA county. I have talked to county council people about this issue. I believe that what we're intending to do there kind of fits in the adventure starts here plan that the city's proposed and put forth and all the other improvements that the city's made, including the Wakeport Park. It kind of does fit with that process. We already currently, on a weekend basis, probably bring 300 to 500 people into the county. I'm sure they, you know, have services they've taken out in the city of Monroe. I think this would only, you know, increase that by doing other events down on the property currently. Most of what we talked about that we want to do with the property, we had really no intention of bringing any of it in the city initially when we acquired it, and most of it can be accomplished in the county except for we did want to build a retirement center at some point and assume that, you know, at some point in the future that would become, you know, come into the city and we could do that on the property at that time. I do believe that the annexation for the property into the city would benefit the city in many ways. One is that they all of a sudden would have a lot of say in what occurs there. Ultimately, you know, you will have some say because the roads go, you know, through the city to get to the property. I think the other side is there would be tax revenue benefits to the city long term. The other side is that the densities would definitely change. It would have city services instead of county services. There would be large septic systems in place and it wouldn't have the city services. The other side of it is currently it's serviced by Sky Meadow Water, so I know at some point we're hopeful that, and I have many memberships in Sky Meadow Water, that it has a combination of working with the city and that changes if they have the water system ultimately. The other side is the 522 expansion with the going to four lanes really does change dynamics for that specific property in the sense that accessibility to the east side of King County is going to change that road. It's going to make it much easier to commute into there. I also think that where it's located is good in the sense that you don't really have to go into, you know, crossover 2 or deal with 2. You can be right there if you do commute into Redmond and Woodville, which many people do. So I guess I pretty much, the county council is kind of the ones that said the only real way to do this is to have the comprehensive plan of Monroe reflect that property or whatever properties you guys intend to bring in. And basically, you know, I think that there would be opportunities to deal with just the properties inside that rural urban transition area, which is, you know, under that zone, it's ultimately likely that would be a growth area for the city at some point in time. So that's what that's currently where we're at. If I have any questions or anything for me, I'm glad to answer them.
Councilmember Hamford.
Yes, just for clarification, can you explain exactly where the property is again?
Yeah, so if you go past the high school on Tester, basically past the Mormon Church, make the freight, basically comes to a 90-degree turn. Okay, 90-degree turn, it's right there. And that property then rolls all the way down to the river. So what they did is Aruda basically goes to the floodplain level. So someone, I don't know how long ago, 10, 15 years ago, put that in the Aruda, basically to the floodplain. And there's still 350 acres of agricultural land that's below, you know, in the floodplain.
Okay, just, that's good.
Paul, would you mind pointing out on the map?
So Mr. Reinhardt's property is kind of in this area right here. Oh, around,
that is a river.
That would be the R5 designated land. Yes. This area down here is all part of the ownership, but that's all zoned Ag 10. So that's Riverway Commercial or something. What is it, Ag 10, Dave? Or?
Yeah, it's zoned Ag 10. Some of the properties, basically, the road kind of goes along there, and I think, Jeff, it might, this looks like it might be a little off, but kind of, I think it more follows the road and goes all the way down there. But then some of the, all that area that where the end is, that tip there, that's all out of the floodplain. So basically, kind of falls along that road with the buildings and all those, that's kind of the edge of the floodplain. So it's a really unique piece of property in the sense that it's so close to the city, but yet so isolated in a lot of ways. So when you come down that road and go through those gates, you know, that kind of sits out on that ice. And then all the rivers converge, the Skykomish, Snoqualmie, and Snohomish River converge on the property. So it's about 3.5 miles of river frontage, which, you know, ultimately I think that some kind of trail connection back to your parks and even into Lord Hill or into the backside of Lord Hill Park makes some sense. The other side is, and if there was further density in the upper part, you know, you could use some of the existing buildings that are horse stall buildings that they could have residents there. They could walk down the hill and get the horse and ride the horse on the property. It was primarily used as a breeding facility and then also kind of as a private zoo. So there's lots of alpacas and llamas there, which you guys probably saw when you drive to.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
I just asked if
there was
the whole
north. Yeah, right. Any other questions?
How far miles are we talking, say, from the high school to the furthest tip of that green?
The furthest tip is probably, depending on the way to access it, I assume that, you know, when it would be developed, the road would go straight off Tester. It would not make that hard right. It would come straight into the property. So from the city, you're talking probably about to the very end of the property, maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles. So the entrance is probably, you know, 3/4 of a mile. Where it makes a hard right, I think that's probably where you enter the property. The city limits already extend up to against the property, where the backside of the prison is. And I assume that the prison probably won't jump on the other side of the high school and build out the prison. It's likely to stay in its footprint. Yeah. So it's a pretty good sized buffer between the prison and the property edge.
For comparison's sake, Paul, and maybe this question better asked later, but how far is the farm from Lowe's?
The farm from where?
Lowe's.
From Lowe's?
Oh. Well, if you go straight up Chain Lake Road into the farm, to the farthest tip of the farm.
It's not very far. Less than 1/4 mile, 1/8 mile. Very short distance.
I would like to say that I filled up the Fed Meyer and 1.3 miles into the farm today.
So, okay, gives a good comparison on both ends as to the furthest tip of the farm, 1-point-something miles.
There's quite a bit of the property that's in a steep slope. As you can see, it goes back against the mitigation bank. It can be set back in, you know, the trails or areas that rises up to about 350 feet in the elevation. So the top portion of it, of course, looks over the hills towards Seattle and looks back towards Index and Persis and right down at Rainier. It has, from a residential standpoint, for the views, it's pretty amazing. It's a southwest facing piece of property, so you do most of your entertaining in the evening, not the morning, so it's kind of a
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, is there anyone else in the audience who would like to provide a comment to City Council on any issue? Okay, then we'll move on from comments from citizens. Maybe Paul, we could get a piece of paper or something to cover that. Great. First portion of tonight's business and action items is an announcement, or actually it's a proclamation. This proclamation is recognizing the work of our Public Works Department. And so if I may, I would like to read a proclamation this time. It's a proclamation regarding Public Works Week. Whereas public works infrastructure, facilities, and services are of vital importance to the health, safety, and well-being of the people of the city of Monroe, and whereas the support of an understanding and informed citizenry is vital to the efficient operation of public works systems and programs such as water, sewers, streets, storm, drainage, and public buildings, and whereas the quality and effectiveness of these facilities, as well as their planning, design, and construction, is vitally dependent upon the efforts and skills of public works officials, and whereas the qualified and dedicated personnel who staff the City of Monroe Public Works Department perform as an important public service, now therefore I do hereby proclaim the week of May 19th through 25th, 2003 as Public Works Week in the City of Monroe, and I call upon all citizens and civic organizations to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our public works and to recognize the contributions which public works employees make every day to our health, safety, comfort, and quality of life. Thank you, Public Works. All right. We have the consent agenda this evening. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Cutterback and seconded by Councilmember Hamford to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? First item under new business is an ordinance extending the marijuana-related land use to interim regulations. Is that correct? This is the first reading?
Correct.
What did we do last week?
Last week we had a public hearing.
That's right.
As a predecessor to taking action on this for first reading.
All right. Well, Paul, this is yours. Anything to say?
Well, just as a reminder, it's a first reading of extending, renewing the interim ordinance that expires June 4th, next month. For another 6 months to December. The basic purpose of this is to extend our interim regulations since the state is still formulating licensing and control and so forth for marijuana. And this will fill that gap quite effectively.
All right, very good. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I move to accept this first reading ordinance 107-2013 renewing the interim zoning regulation adopted under Ordinance 026-2012, codified in Chapter 18.70 MMC Marijuana-Related Uses, adopting findings in support thereof, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second. A motion has been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Davis. As read, any other questions or comments for Mr. Feldman? Seeing no lights, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The next item is the expansion or the discussion on urban growth area expansion. Jeff?
Mr. Mayor, Council. So Mr. Remlinger pointed out, I think they're kind of threw it out on the table. The cover sheet, as described, is a discussion to talk about our 2015 comprehensive plan update. Give you a little bit of background, and this kind of set the table because we'll be talking about county comprehensive plan processes and DOC procedures, and city comprehensive plans,
and doctor procedures. And there's quite a large difference between the two. About 3 years ago, the county council went from an annual docket cycle, which the city employs, and the county went to a hybrid every other year docket cycle. The way that works is on the first two-year cycle, they will do minor docket amendments. And typically what that means is they will change land use designations in place. They will not move urban growth boundaries. The following 2 years, hence 4 years down the road, they will go through a major docket cycle. And at that time, they'll consider UGA expansions and other land use designations that are more major variety. The 2015 comprehensive plan update is a state-mandated action that now takes place every 8 years. So this will be the 8-year comprehensive plan update. It just so happens that the 8-year comprehensive plan update will coincide with the 4th-year major docket cycle for the county. Now, if I've confused you enough yet, bear with me, because there's more. So we'll have two separate actions that will coincide and take place and must be completed by June 30th of 2015. This process started about 18 months ago with the launch of Snohomish County Tomorrow's OFM projections and billable lands analysis that was done at the county level. In October, the county sent out a letter to all municipalities, all 20 cities, asking if we had any major land use applications that we would like to enter into the 2015 docket cycle. For some reason, we're not sure what happened to Monroe's entrance into that. I don't know where the letter is. Nobody seems to really feel comfortable with the fact that we were affirmatively notified of that action. But the application had to be in to the county by October 31st of last year, 2012. And that's for a major docket or major UGA expansion. This property here, just to keep you in mind or informed, and this overlay, this light green overlay, is the root for Monroe right here. That doesn't perfectly coincide with the property that's underneath it, but in general, that's the scope. This was put in place the last time the city council adopted its comprehensive plan during its major update, and I believe that took place in 05, Paul?
Not sure.
We're predated both of us, and our historian is here tonight. He's walking through England or France or someplace. So. Needless to say, that was put in place. The RUTA, the Rural Urban Transition Area, as described under GMA, is a precursor or an anticipatory designation for future urban growth or encroachment into the rural environment. So this RUTA is anticipated to become urban growth area and then become annexed into the city limits. So that's kind of the three-step process. So we've already put the first piece in place. The county is comprehensive plan also shows the RUTA on their comprehensive plan map. So here we are today. Dave has spoke with us several times about his property. We have, as staff, discussed at great length this piece of property to add industrial and commercial capacity to city limits. I think you're all familiar with that. So here's the conundrum we're in right now. On May 29th, the county council will establish the parameters or the projects within the 2015 docket. At that public hearing, I believe there's 5 cities that have applications that were submitted on the timeline. Part of that application process where the cities were required to pay a entrance fee, I believe it was about $2,800. On top of that, they had to agree to pay a certain amount for the environmental impact statement that's going to follow to analyze the impacts of that new land use change. On top of that, the buildable lands analysis and the OFM population allocation that the county council has selected The county planners are forecasting zero UGA expansion is required during the 2015 comprehensive plan update. They feel as though that any population growth that Snohomish County is going to see between 2015 and 2035 can be completely absorbed within the existing urban growth areas through infill. So there's another hurdle that we have to overcome. So why are we here tonight to talk about this? Staff feels that this expansion of this RUTA is essential to the growth of Mineral. And that's for many purposes. Our industrial park is filling up. It's underutilized, but there isn't any large tracts of vacant land that are available. When I receive phone calls from commercial real estate agents looking for land, typically they don't tell me what the use is. They just say we're looking for 10 acres, or we're looking for 5 acres, or we're looking for 100 acres. And to have a large tract of land that's designated for industrial or commercial use, albeit it's not, there's houses out there right now, and we require a lot of acquisition and assemblage, that zoning designation would create potential. On top of that, this piece of property down here, as Davis described, it is a great bench. And in terms of the city limits, we would be looking at between 300 and 380 homes within the zoning that most likely would fall onto that if it was inside the city's urban growth area and zoned with a 4 units per acre designation, 85 acres, 4 acres. So about 300 or so homes be placed on here. On top of that, what the Remlanders would like to do is take this southern piece and put a commercial node on top of it. They would like to do perhaps a hotel, perhaps a retirement type community, utilize their large barns that are down there for commercial activities. Bringing the sewer down to this area would allow for the conference center, it would allow for restaurants, and it would allow for perhaps wineries or distilleries or breweries, that type of thing. It's a great piece of property. It would add a tremendous amount of property value to our city. And at the same time, I hate to use the word gentrify, but it would take the south end of the town and really, really utilize that piece of property at its highest and best use. Right now, having it zoned at R5, limiting it to about 15 to 18 residential units, doesn't make a lot of sense. Being in county designation. So staff would like to have a conversation with council, and several steps we could walk through. Gene Brazel and I, city administrator, met with Dave Summers about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks. He explained with Will Hall, their council analyst that works on land use issues, just what I've informed you of. Now, there are some on-ramps that still exist, and they're political on-ramps, I'll be quite honest with you. In the end, the comprehensive plan and the docket, in the end, are 100% political decisions. It requires sometimes a lot of staff work in order to achieve those political ends, but if we have the political support to move forward with this, the May 29th date is not a deadline. It's more of an obstruction. So here's what we're looking at. Let me back up one more step. The next option to, if we don't expand our urban growth area during 2015, our next opportunity will be in 2019. We'll skip 2 years for the minor cycle, and then we'll go 4 years into the major cycle. That'll be the next opportunity for the city of Monroe to request from the county council this opportunity. So that said, if we were to place this action into the city's docket cycle and study it from our perspective, do the SEPA analysis, the environmental impact work that's required, it will require an environmental impact statement. There's ways to make that statement a stronger document by perhaps hiring the same consultant that the county's using for their environmental impact statement, so that the work that's done
can't be questioned by the county. Number two, if that was done, and it's, you know, we come around at the end of 2013, or if it's not achieved by 2013, we get it done in the 2014 docket cycle, then our plan will show that this is our urban growth area, assuming that the council or the future council at that time adopts the comprehensive plan amendment as it works through the system. The city's plan would show that as our urban growth area. We, as a city government, cannot by ourselves modify our urban growth area. However, the county council would look at that and they would say Monroe's plan is inconsistent with the county's comprehensive plan. So they would have to make a decision at that time. Do we allow and modify the county's comprehensive plan to bring it into consistency with Monroe as the citizens and the city council have recommended? And that's again assuming that passes at the city level. Or they can brute force it and they can say, no, we don't agree with what Monroe has done, and they can force our plan to be consistent with the county's. In the end, it's the county council's decision. We may do this work and spend the money to do the environmental work, but and end up with nothing. Now, that said, again, it's not nothing, because once the environmental work is established, it lives, and it will stay with the property, and that document would be a valid document to use in the future, perhaps 2 years or 4 years down the road. Now, the county council's two-year docket cycle was put in place by the current county council. The previous county council, it was an annual docket cycle, so all that could change back. You just don't know. Politics are politics. So what we're here tonight to ask is, number one, is this a good idea? And what we would have to do is we'd have to sit down with the Remlanders as the applicant and also discuss the city's option to find out what the environmental work would cost, what that looks like, what the city's contribution would be, what the Remlanders' contribution would be. So that would be a negotiation. Number two, if we decide to move forward with it, could we draft a resolution to present to the county council describing our intent, and we could enter that into the legislative record on May 29th to support a future action. GMA so often is dropping breadcrumbs along the trail of land use actions, and establishing that record at this point, while we may get voted down on May 29th, and the county council may say, no, Monroe, you're late, what it does do is it shows legislative intent on our part, and it allows them or gives them that step stool if they choose to at a future date to bring it on board. So with that, I would, Paul, do you have any other comments?
No, I just think that what Jeff has just said is probably one of the most important points, is that if council views this in a positive way, that we take the first step with a resolution that states our intent and our thinking behind this, and that will give us some inertia at this very first step of May 29th. But if it doesn't make that step, then it does begin to build as we get into it deeper and deeper with a comp plan amendment. If we're going to consider this, now is definitely the time to start.
So there you are, Mr. Mayor.
For some of the newer council members, this southwest portion of the city here, and especially the area west of 522, and to a degree the portion to the southeast of 522 heading towards the Rio River, has been discussed by the planning department going back to Hiller West at least 10 years. It's been on the radar. We had had one other or two other attempts to do a scaled down version of expansion of UGA for the southwest portion. That would be near the animal hospital, I think, is up there on that road. And I think we talked about doing a smaller version as well, but again, a year or so ago, a couple years ago, I think it was. But I think, as Jeff has shared this evening, that using the Ruta as a natural boundary or outline would be, you know, the way to go at this point. So just some background. I mean, this has been 10 years in the discussion process. So. Any questions for council or for Jeff, council? Comments? Councilor McKenna.
Thank you, Jeff. Just want to make sure I understand. So we have an option, even though it's late, to go before them May 29th. And at that point, they can say, sorry, you're too late. If they, for some reason, accepted it, would then we get in with, you said there was kind of a joint EIS where everybody pays into at that time. If they accepted us, would we get in with that EIS?
Yes.
Okay. So the cost would be less if that were to happen than if we proceed on a different track.
Less is relative. It's relative. Yeah. Really, when they carve it out, they'll look at this piece as a project within the overall scope.
Sure.
And so when they get the bid, where it would save money is they'll have a consultant that will look at comprehensively the impacts of all the applications at the same time. So there will be a certain scale of savings. So I would imagine it would be a little bit less if it was done through the community.
Okay. And so if they say no, at that point you said another option is for us to just continue and do an EIS and let them know we're interested in this, and then the next timeline would be 2014. Is that what I heard you say?
Well, depending on how fast we can get the work done as staff and an outside consultant, we could put it onto the 2013 comprehensive plan docket. And if the work can be completed, then that would be added together with the other work we're already doing this year. If it can't be completed, then we would ask council to extend that into the 2014 cycle so that we can make that work.
And that would be our own track, but then if we can come before the county again until 2019 to be allowed it to be UGA?
Well, it could come in front of, if we were to complete our work, what would happen is our plan would then be inconsistent with the county's plan.
Right.
So in 2015, they will have to address it in one way or another.
But they could say, too bad. And then it would be 2019.
Then it would be 2019.
Okay, I just wanted to know the different timelines and how it proceeded. Thank you.
Councilmember Hammer.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jeff, for describing everything. I'm pretty sure I understand what we're gambling here, literally. But judging by the location of the property and the value of the property, I can't see why we wouldn't risk putting some city time and effort and money towards this to try and get it into the limits. Whether we make it on the next cycle or if we end up having to wait till 19, at least our work will have been done and the foundation will be laid, so we have something to present to county council. So. With that being said, I'll go ahead and move to direct staff to include the proposed UGA expansion on the 2013 comprehensive plan docket.
Second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Williams to direct staff to include the proposed UGA expansion on the 2013 comprehensive plan docket.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, just for clarification, If you simply add it to the docket at this point without financial clarification, we're going to, as a city and the taxpayers, will bear the burden of the entire environmental impact statement. So if you could add to that, sit down with the other potential applicants to sit down and negotiate how those fees may be split, I think that would be an appropriate step.
So you're asking for a friendly motion to say comprehensive plan docket and to include any... and to include
potential cost sharing with landowners and within the area.
Accepted friendly motion.
Accepted
friendly motion. Okay. All right. Okay, Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Jeff, during this process, would we also need to expand the RUTA or show that we want to expand the RUTA, or do we just.
RUTAs are kind of disappearing. Because counties have ignored quite honestly, and there's probably good reason for that. For instance, the Roosevelt Ridge annexation that we attempted we're not going to get that into the city limits anytime in the future. So it might be a case made where during this process we want to reduce our growth area, perhaps, and exchange it for a different area of town that maybe is a more desirable, more annexable piece of property. I'm not saying that's possible, but I'm just using those as examples. But Root is, by and large, I think in the planning community, they don't really carry a lot of weight. So I wouldn't think we would want to, at this time, expand our RUTA any further. That would probably be something we would want to consider as we go towards the 2013 comprehensive plan update.
And I wasn't suggesting it. We haven't talked about it at all. I just wanted some clarification on if that was part of what they were going to also expect to hear from us, that they being the county, that, you know, but it sounds like the RUTA side of it is not something we would be factoring in.
I don't think so.
Okay, and you had touched on a topic that I hadn't even considered, but is the potential for the city during this process to exchange UGA to maybe sweeten it in the county's eyes, or, you know, is this going to be looked at as a whole as part of that process?
Well, the whole purpose of a docket is to look at it holistically, and particularly when we get to 2015 and look at the city's comprehensive plan update, our major update. And we're hiring a consultant to help us with that, and we're going to be introducing those pieces to council over the next months. But that would be the time to look at that and to say, does it make sense to have this piece of UGA that we can't annex or perhaps exchange it? And in the current climate where the population allocation and the buildable lands analysis don't support UGA expansions, that might be a way to allow for a UGA expansion, because you're actually not increasing the city's density, you're restructuring it.
Okay, and I mean, to me, this corner of Monroe has always been extremely underutilized, so it would be, and the fact that if we can move it in and have it built out to our design guidelines, I mean, I can't see any downsides to this at all, so. I sent a motion, but I clearly think it's that we should do so.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council.
Right. Moving on here to Rose Lane.
Thank you, Mayor. Today we're bringing forth a final plat for Rose Lane Estates. It's just under 5 acres, just north of Main Street on Dickinson. There are 26 lots. There are several houses under construction. And all the improvements, it's been reviewed, all the improvements have been made, with the exception of final asphalt paving and some perimeter fencing. Those improvements have been bonded, really finished this year yet. So we are recommending approval of that final plat. And the landowner is also here tonight. If you have any questions for myself or Rick Hansen, we're here.
All right, Councilmember Geary.
Thank you. Paul, I have a question. Brad is a long ways away, so I don't know who may or may not be able to answer this. When we first looked at this, and we're moving forward with it, we saw a map where, at least initially, there was this little green finger of county numbering that was going to go in there, and we had said that it actually made more sense to put this particular completely surrounded by city numbering section in city numbering. When I'm looking at the final plat map that we have, it's on page 3 of 3 of our third attachment. And last time I actually followed up with Brad on this after that last meeting. So we said, it makes sense to use city, streets and numbering here. Along the north side of that, it's still labeled as 159th Street Southeast, and that would be, that would actually create an issue. And he had actually brought that to me. I thought we had taken care of that last time. That was the intent. That would need to be you know, get some name it after some, you know, I don't know, name it after something. That would need to change, that segment of 159. I don't know if this makes street names official or not. By voting for this, or if it's just the legal lots, what action is actually taking place by us approving this evening. I would think that we might be able to, you know, rename things. Things can be renamed as necessary, but I didn't know if you would be able to answer that.
At this point, this plat would adopt the lots, the easements, the street names, the improvements, everything as it is shown, as it is set up at this point. The street name can certainly change in the future at some point, but this plat does carry all of this with it.
I appreciate that. Is there a... Paul or perhaps the mayor knows this, is there a specific time constraint to do this? Usually there is, because we want to keep things moving for folks. There is a time constraint. Excellent.
Okay. With adoption of the final plat, a developer or builder or developer can legally sell lots.
Okay.
Without the final plat recorded, they can't be sold.
If you wanted to combine two of them together, I might be interested. That's a side note.
I'm sure to sell you two lots.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, I'm certainly in favor of doing this. I am concerned about that top street name not being that, so I'm going to go ahead and make the motion. I'm going to make just a slight amendment so that if Brad needs to make changes when he comes back, he can. That would be the only thing I would change about this. Motion to adopt resolution 2013-016, approving the final plat of the Roseland Estates, authorizing the mayor and city clerk execute written approval on the face of the Roseland Estates final plat upon completion of review and approval by the city engineer and subdivision administrator, and all necessary final financial securities have been submitted and fees paid, with just the quick addendum that the far east part of 159th Street Southeast is renamed to a city, something that's compliant with the city.
Pardon? Okay, motions are made by Councilmember Green, seconded by Councilmember Hamford, as read. And Paul, do you know the answer to that? So essentially what we're doing is the City Council, if they approve tonight, would be approving the plat to move forward. However, at some point that northern or that eastern portion of 159th, as you drive in towards, will have to change from 159th to something Monroe. Do you see that as? I'm just asking the question. Is that going to be something that's going to need further action by council? I mean, I'm sure council is going to have to approve what the name of the street is at that point. Will that have an impact on the ability of this plat to move forward?
No, I don't think so. I believe council would need to approve a street name change at some point. I'm not sure of the exact process for that. But with council approval, that gives Rick the ability to record this plat. And you know, street names are something that can be changed that don't need to wait, I believe, on recording.
Will there have to be some type of submission of information or application to the county or to the city or anything like that once that street has been renamed?
Well, it would be some sort of minor amendment to the plat to reflect the change. It'd be like almost like a bottom line adjustment. You change a property line. A fairly simple mechanism to make a slight change like that.
That's right again. Oh,
if I still on the floor,
I thought
Brad had the authority to do that when I talked to him. He had said that we needed to actually make a corrective action based on what we did last time. So if we can handle that separately, then that's fine, and I'll change my motion just to be the one that that's presented here. I thought he had. I was pretty sure Brad told me he had the authority to do. You know, we said go do it. You know, pick a name. You know, just put a name on it. That I was pretty sure he had the authority to do that. Again, if I'm wrong, we would need to take some action anyway. As long as we can do that later, going to create an issue, and we just heard from the fire department, the police department, about not creating too many anomalies, so it will need to get fixed, is my point. And maybe, so maybe this isn't exactly the right time to do it. If we can do it later, then I will amend my motion to just be the one that you see here, minus striking the part that I said about the address.
I concur.
Okay, so your motion is then to adopt Resolution 2013-016, approving the final plat of Roseland Estates and authorizing the mayor and city clerk to execute written approval on the face of the Roseland Estates final plat upon completion of review and approval by the city engineer and subdivision administrator, and all necessary financial securities have been submitted and fees paid. Any other questions? Okay. All those then in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item here is the interim ordinance amending Chapter 18 MMC interim sign code, second and final reading. And Jeff.
So, Mr. Mayor, so tonight we're here on the second reading of the amendment to the interim sign code regulations. I've always found that when you make an error, it's best to confess and to apologize. And last week, we were pretty firm in that the position of the sign to 522 was very clearly laid out in the code, and after we reviewed it, it was a little mushy, quite honestly. So what's in front of you tonight is a slight tweak to the language we presented to you last week, and if you were to look at pages
8 of 13
and 9 of 13, you will see there's an underlying sentence. Let's look at page 8 of 13, the very last row. You'll see that per 522 frontage at 522 and Main Street intersection, sign must be perpendicular to and abutting 522 right of way. So we've added that language into the comments section to clarify how the sign should be positioned and which roadway it should be positioned to. So with that said, we're here to have second reading tonight, and I have to turn it over to you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you very much. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I'll make motion to accept as second and final reading ordinance number 006-2013. Amending interim ordinance number 002-2013 with respect to height limitations on certain freestanding limited highway signs as proposed in Exhibit 1.
Second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Gearing to accept a sign on the second and final reading ordinance 006-2013. Councilmember Hanford, any other comments? No. Councilmember Cutback.
Thank you. I want to thank Paul for meeting with me after the meeting last week. And last week I voted against this, the sign code, the amendment for the 45-foot sign, because I was concerned that it didn't have the right language. So I really appreciate Paul and I appreciate Jeff taking a look at that and adding the language to the code. So tonight I will be voting for it. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? All right, very good. Then all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Do you have another one? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, you are next, aren't you?
It's Phil Lester.
Exactly. All right.
Mayor, if I may, before we move to study session topics, I would like to potentially add an item to the agenda tonight.
Okay.
If you're going to recess the meeting, I would move into study session.
Just about. But before I do, I will officially, so for the written or for the for those listening to the tapes, I wanted to make sure that for the record, Councilmember Gamble has joined us. He joined us about an hour ago. I just forgot to do that on the record. So, Councilmember Hearing.
Thank you. Council, I received a phone call from Administrator Brazel, who had talked to City Attorney Love, and based on the mayor's disclosure last week about his new job with Aramark, and similar along with Gamble's necessary action, we need to take action to appoint someone else to be the official administrator of that contract for the rest of this year. And the suggestion was that it would be Mayor, whoever would serve in Mayor Pro Tem, which is currently Councilmember Williams. So I would move that we add an item to the agenda, first of all, to appoint Mayor Pro Tem as the administrator of the city's contract with Aramark for the remainder of 2013.
So this is just an added to the agenda.
Second. Okay, motion's been made by Councilmember Green and seconded by Councilmember Camp to appoint
add him to the agenda,
appointing
Mayor Pro Tem
as the administrator
of the city's contract with Aramark.
As said.
For the remainder.
All right. Any questions? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Councilmember Gary.
Thank you. The need, because the mayor works here, would be similar if the roles were switched. It was Comcast and Councilmember Gamble was the mayor. We would need to do the exact same things because he works there. And since the mayor's role is to administrate all those contracts, it needs to be somebody else. And so, to that end, it's if Gene had asked us, since he's out of town, hey, can we do that tonight? So, again, that's before you. And to that end, I would move that we appoint the mayor pro tem as administrator of the city's contract with Aramark for the remainder of 2013.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Gary and seconded by Councilmember Camp to appoint Mayor Pro Tem as the administrator of the Aramark contract for the remainder of 2013. Okay. Any questions? All right, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. At this time, we will recess the meeting and reconvene now in a study portion of the study session portion of tonight's agenda. And the first of which is the economic development goals. And this is a verbal report by our economic development manager, Jeff Sachs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, goals, that's looking forward, and I have a hard time talking about the future without at least rehearsing the past. And I just wanted to look back at about the last 18 months, tenure here, and talk about the different areas of operation that I've worked on, and talk to you about how that influences the future looking forward. So, just land transactions. Cadman DNR, we've met with Cadman and discussed their deeding of that property over to us. We've sold the Galaxy Theater fee title interest property. We've completed a major sale to Providence. The city has monitored the Walmart negotiations, extended that purchase and sale agreement, received remuneration for that effort, and monitored court actions. We've developed, negotiated, and executed a contract with Propulsion, better known as H3O, and established that contract out at Lake Tai. Advised council on multiple land offers through the year, and we've taken multiple different actions on those activities. Engaged in landfill rehabilitation effort and discussed the potential future sale of our landfill and what that might mean to the city as far as dollars go. And then, as odd as it may sound, public restrooms. That's a land use, land type situation. We'll be talking about that downtown in the future, and that would require an acquisition of property. Policy issues. When I came to work here, the mayor asked me to be involved in policy issues. I didn't quite understand him quite as seriously as he meant it at the time, but he meant all policy issues. So what we've looked at is assisted in the development of a city reserve policy. The council took a hard look at that, and I was able to throw some information into that. I think I drove the update to the North Kelsey and the downtown comprehensive plan updates to remove code language from the comprehensive plan to make the codes more usable. I've introduced impact mitigation impact fee discussion to council, and we'll be having more of that discussion as time goes along. I've managed the lodging tax advisory committee for the city and refocused that effort from kind of a traditional, we give money to the same groups every year because they've always applied, to focusing it on the purpose of the legislation that created it, and that's to focus on overnight stays in our local hotels. And worked on the sign code amendment that council just, I think, kind of polished up for now. We'll be back to finish that up in the future. And also worked on advising on the sewer extension outside city limits, as well as the installation of and completion of our sewer line out of the North Kelsey commercial area in order for us to be able to sell that property properly. Community involvement's been a real important part of this job. It's hard to define all the different areas that have touched, but the two major areas are working with our Chamber of Commerce. I think we've got a Chamber of Commerce that's got standing on two solid feet right now, and they're moving forward and growing. I work with Dream, and that's going to be a continuous challenge, working with that association downtown. As you guys heard when we were talking about changing the parking requirements, there are several different opinions that will appear from the different business owners down there, so it's a challenge. I've worked with the fairgrounds behind the scenes as well as High Road Productions to establish the fairgrounds as a Monroe institution instead of a county institution. And I think that project is well underway. I know the city is looking at the fairgrounds as an asset. The chamber is looking at the fairgrounds as an asset. And the population, I think, is going to start to feel as the fairgrounds belong to the city of Monroe rather than Snohomish County. I sit in on the majority of the pre-application meetings that come through for potential businesses and residential developments. In the end, advocate for the business community or the applicant. And a lot of times that means I sit down in a room with other city staff members and we have animated discussions at times about whether the code is correct, whether we're doing the right thing, and if the code's, we determine maybe slowing the process down, that's when we bring it to you guys and you get the chance to intercede in there. We've also talked about the Monroe Music Fest. That came on board, and that's been a fun project to work with. From a regional perspective, economic development is starting to take off in several different ways, but three in particular. There's a group of folks that do my job all over the county, and we meet together. They call it the ED Pros meeting, and that's kind of managed by the Economic Alliance in Snohomish County. And we all get together on a monthly basis, and we talk about economic development in each of our communities. And quite honestly, the city of Monroe we're doing things in a much different way than a lot of the other cities. A lot of the other cities, I don't know if you noticed, but Mount Lake Terrace just asked for a bond to rebuild their city center, failed for the second time. They're reaching out to the taxpayers and to grant payers, typically the federal and state government, to pay for improvements in their community. I think what we're doing in the city is a bit different. We first try to do it ourselves. And if we can do it ourselves and make it go ourselves, we don't need to reach out for help. And I think that's a very instructive difference between the way the city has approached things and the way some of the other cities are approaching things. With confidence to move forward, make a decision, and make it happen. We're engaged in a process called the Innovation Partnership Zone. You've heard bits and pieces about it. I promise you're going to get a full-scale presentation in the next month or two. Jim Castman has come on board. He's pulled us together. We're doing we got through a very painful process of mission, vision, and values, and we're starting to pull together the pieces for an application, and we hope to submit for our IPZ application through the State Department of Commerce sometime this fall. And so that's the goal, and I'd like to bring Jim to council to present to you what the IPZ is all about and what we're doing with that. And then, as we presented in February, and it's been a bit of a slow startup, the EB-5 immigration investment program, and the RFP is complete. Working with Jamie Gian right now to get it published, and so probably within the next month or so, we'll start to have a formulation to see whether or not that's a program that makes sense for the city or not. And so that kind of leads me to going forward. Where in the heck are we going to go with economic development in this town? And I was driving home from Montana Sunday, and, And all I could think of, and my wife says, don't say it, Jeff, but I'm going to say it anyway, my economic development plan really is a blank sheet of paper. And to a lot of people, that sounds like kind of a big cop-out, that vacant space in a void a lot of times, I think, presents the maximum opportunity for something really cool to happen. And I've taken that approach with everything I've done here, is sit down with a blank sheet of paper, fill up the facts, and try to figure out, does it make sense? And it's been a successful tool for me. I know for you as decision makers, a lot of times that puts you in a position where all you have is a blank sheet of paper, and we have all the facts. So I will try not to present a blank sheet to you guys. But going forward, in general, we have North Kelsey land sales. That's number one, quite honestly, on my priority list. If we don't get that property sold, we're going to continue to pay debt, and we're not going to be able to move forward with some of the other things that I know the city would like to do, and I know all of you have ideas that you would like to do in this town to make improvements for the citizens that live here. The IPZ is going to be a focus, and that's going to be a long-term focus, focused on recreational assets from Stevens Pass to the Port of Everett, and to bring in companies that can utilize our recreational assets to their advantage. And that's about the easiest way to describe it. But if you are a guy that likes to rock climb and you came up with a better pair of climbing shoes and you built 10 pair and you wanted to try them out, you'd take them up to the index wall and hopefully there'd be some climbers up there and strap them on and test them out for you. That being the concept, if the shoe starts to work, then they got to build it somewhere. And we have an industrial park, and we have folks here in our community who would like to go to work doing that work. On top of that, we have Everett Community College and Washington State University. Their mechanical engineering department is fully focused into this area. And the idea being is the educational institutions would put internships and students into those businesses to help those businesses design and build their materials. The students would get the job experience and an idea that they're doing the right things with their lives. And it starts to kind of pull together, a zone, if you will, to use our recreational assets that are unique to our valley and utilize our industrial capacity and our educational institutions to create jobs and to create wealth for a community. An example of this is... most people don't know, but in a basement of a University of Washington building, there's a very cool lab that where all of Lamborghini's research and development is done. And they've outgrown their lab. And right now they're shopping around. And May 23rd, Mr. Palmer from the Department of Commerce is going to be up here talking with the IPZ group about the potential of partnering with Washington State University Mechanical Engineering Department, Everett Community College, and perhaps Lamborghini, and bring that research and development arm up to Monroe. Now, whether or not it works or not, I don't know, but this is a really cool opportunity. Jim Castman was telling me he went down and met Pablo, who runs the show down there, and so they went through the whole routine, and inside there, Nike does a lot of their shoe development. They're building a composite fiber shoe. There are Shimano gear set is in there looking at bike parts. Lamborghini's inside there, and the University of Washington funnels kids, students into the program to work on it. But they left, they went to lunch. Pablo says, hey, do you want to go for a ride? Well, it turns out it was a 2014 model Lamborghini sitting there, 295 horsepower. And anyway, Jim said that he'd never felt blood hit the back of his skull before going down Lake Washington Boulevard. Needless to say, it's fun to be involved in that kind of thing. There's immense opportunity for disappointment, but there's also that just little piece that says there's success and hope that we could bring something like that to Monroe. And once you get that little nest of minds that are starting to work creatively, other companies start to feed into it and start asking, well, can you do some work for us? That's the idea. EB5, we're going to continue to work on that, and I'll be frank with you. I've been frank with the mayor. I've been uncomfortable with the city's owning of a regional center. It's complicated. And as you start to peel back the onion, and the part that scares me the most is the money. There's an immense amount of money involved. You've got families and citizenship, and there's a whole bunch of things involved that if we're the owners, we can solve the liability problems, but can we solve the human problems and the and interactions, and SEC filings and all of that? And there's money that's, everybody makes money through this process. I don't know if that's the right thing for government, but we're going to get those proposals in, and we're going to evaluate them and bring them to you guys and let you take a good hard look at them. There is interest in forming a regional center in Monroe that's not owned by the city, and that's also an option inside the RFP, is for those folks to come in and say, well, if the city's willing to endorse this proposal, we would own it, and they'll. And that's a much different beast, and that allows us to get behind this program and still attract that foreign investment, help businesses grow here. We'll see how that works out. Comprehensive plan update. I think from an economic development perspective, personally, I'm interested in land use policy. I've done it for 15 years, but it's the essential building block to growth. And not only growth, but to grow in the way that the city should grow, and to try to do it in a way that makes the landowner who has a property right whole through that process. So if we can work through our comprehensive plan and understand that it's not the city's land that we're planning, it's private property owners' land that we're planning for, I think that that's a different approach, and I think we can do it in such a way that really maximizes the landowner's needs. Mitigation fees on all levels. We need to come back to council, and unfortunately the majority of our fees are bundled up inside comprehensive plans, and we're going to have to unbundle them one at a time. I know council would like to look at them holistically, but what I will be doing is coming back to you and showing you school mitigation fees. Here's where they are. Here's what it's going to require to change. Here's how long it'll take to change it. Transportation fees, same story. Parks, same story. School fees and park fees can be changed sooner than transportation fees, but I want to lay that out to you in whole. The landfill. I think this is probably the most exciting potential for this city that we have. Honest to Pete, after talking with the engineers and talking with landowners and some of the things that developers could see on that property already, just by talking about it, that piece of property has great value to the city. We own it. And we can put something up there that would really improve that whole end of town. Instead of having a big pile of dirt that the kids enjoy 2 days a year when it might snow, we'll have a valuable piece of property that's on the tax rolls, paying property tax, generating sales tax, and perhaps residential capacity. So more to follow on that. Downtown festival lot, I think that's something that I'm going to put some energy into and present that to you folks for a decision. See if we can't come up with the funds and determine, perhaps we have a lot of in-house talent architecturally, landscape architects in particular, that we could draw up a really nice festival lot that would serve parking, restrooms, and also that area for community events in our downtown area. And find a piece of property, go out, identify it, buy it, and convert it into something that, that would be a nice asset. It goes right back to the land sales. If we don't sell the land, you guys are not going to be in the position to make that decision to spend that money. And then chamber support, I think, is essential. I will continue to work with the chamber. I'm their biggest fan. I think what they're doing right now with the lodging tax advisory money, that the $30,000 council approved to give them this year, perhaps isn't enough. And you'll see us coming back to you next year, probably for a request for more money, because the return is already starting to show itself. We're getting measured results. And for you computer guys up there, we're getting Google Analytics type results, hits from places, Norway, South Africa, South America, all sorts of China. People are looking into Monroe, tremendous amount of interest out of Canada right now in what we're doing here. So what's good about what the Chamber is doing is now they're on their feet. Anik has gotten involved with the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau and starting to work with that marketing group and start with tour operators and starting to put Monroe on the map. We have a substantial hotel capacity here that's really underutilized. And those tour groups that come into the Tulalip area to on tour, to gamble for the most part, to shop, they're looking for places to stay, and they're going as far south as Kirkland to find hotel rooms as a tour bus. So why shouldn't we have those tour buses coming to Monroe? So we'll continue to work on that. So in general, my theory, I guess, is to stay informed and engaged in all areas of city government, looking for better policy and process, program delivery, while advocating for taxpayers in the city of Monroe. That's kind of a nutshell of how I want to go about doing my day-to-day work, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
That's what I remember.
Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate all the work that you do and have done. I appreciate your review because that's good to remind us of where we've been the last couple of years. The one question I had was, on the agenda next week, we have the resolution authorizing the city staff to work with the school district and the college on projects of mutual interest. I'm assuming at that point you'll have some kind of presentation, or because I'm very interested in that. So, you know, I can wait another week if that's when you're going to give us the meat of the idea.
Sure, and that's I'm involved in that process. In a nutshell, the purpose of the resolution isn't so much about what it says we're going to do. It's about repairing what we have been doing in this community. The school district, by and large, and the city have worked across purposes a lot. I'm not saying we haven't worked together a lot. But what the resolution is a very intentional statement that we're asking from both the city council and from the Monroe School Board to both adopt, so that when staff gets together and starts having discussions about potential in this town, that when we go back to our elected officials, we don't get Shanghai, if you will. We can have honest negotiations without fear that some political agenda or some personality might not like a project. And I'll give you a classic example, and that's the Hill Street extension through Memorial Field. Another example is school mitigation. Staff had very good, strong, honest conversations. We thought we had a going forward plan that both organizations could work with. And for the best way to describe it is when it got to the elected level, there was disagreement. So the intent of that resolution, while we do want to work together, and one of the great things that is going to come up, I believe, is a focused plan for this campus, whether it's the city by itself, the city with the Monroe School District, or the city with school district and the community college. If we can get there, that'd be terrific. But the initial purpose of that resolution is to set the table and say, here are the parameters that we're going to work together with. We're going to do it above board. We're going to do it honestly. And see if we can't repair that.
Okay, thank you. I'm looking forward to that happening, working together, and becoming allies.
Yeah. So. Sounds good, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Councilor,
thank you. An impressive list. I want to say thanks as well for all that stuff. It's good to get not just reminded of it, but it's so many things are happening because of your involvement. And I love to hear the things that are still yet to come. I think the landfill to me is like a kind of like this like diamond in the rough thing. I mean, how crazy is that? That the okay, so it's the sledding mill, but right. Yeah. I look forward to the stuff that you have here and the more that you have here, the more that you're involved. I look forward to it. Appreciate what you've done.
Well, I want to thank you guys because we don't achieve things unless you guys give us the okay. That's the important message.
Thanks. Councilmember, I just want to say I'm very appreciative for what you do. I can appreciate you saying that my agenda is a blank slate, and I actually, after watching you the last, 18 months or so, have appreciated the very proactive approach that you take. And when you get a door closed and you get on you, then you find something else to do. And I just think that while I was fully in support of your position a year before we had the rest of the funding put together for it, I don't think I even anticipated that it would have this much of an impact. I think it's fairly unique for Monroe in our area to have somebody who's very business focused and looking to drive business and help the free enterprise side of things. And oftentimes government gets just too bogged down in regulations and telling people what they can't do. So I'm just ecstatic that we do this here in Monroe, and I take my hat off to you. I like that you work really fast, although it sometimes creates problems for us on council. But I appreciate that, and it's one of my pet peeves about government, how slow it is. And so, I can appreciate both sides of that. But I do like that you're constantly pushing us to move forward. And we've seen results here that I would say other cities in our general vicinity have not seen. So I just thank you for that.
Well, to echo when we brought Mr. Sachs on board as the economic development manager, I gave him some very few directives, but I think clear directives, and one of those was to be that advocate on behalf of business and on behalf of the community, understanding that it might at times create some very what was the word you were? Colorful?
Animated.
animated discussions within staff. But I think the relationship between the economic development goals and those goals of our planning community have come to some very favorable and beneficial conclusions, compromise, whatever word you wanted to call it. So, that and the fact that we have built, I think, a very substantial relationship with business and with Chamber and other parties here in the Monroe area based on the activities and actions that Mr. Sachs has taken. I think the value right now is... If I could coin the term for the commercial, is priceless. And on behalf of myself as well, thanks, Jeff, for the job well done. And I look forward to the continued success as we move forward.
Thank you.
All right, next on the agenda this evening under study session is a discussion on the Comprehensive Plan Amendment to Natural Environment. And Mr. Pavelka.
Must be a little anticlimactic after that fine presentation, but one of our comprehensive plan amendment for 2013 is looking at several chapters of the comp plan, the existing comp plan, and doing some basic updating, house cleaning to give our consultant that we'll be having on board about middle of July a better stage to work from in updating our 2015 comp plan. This is the first element in the book, Natural Environment, that basically, it talks about the land in the community. It talks about a lot of things like critical areas, flood zone, and so forth. And what we've done so far, this is the first one that we started with. We've also been working on a couple of others in the meantime, is to consider
removing, updating language that relates to work that has been completed or that is no longer relevant. And I can tell you that there's a good deal more editing that I'd like to do within this chapter than what you see here in the work done to date. And what we're looking for is some reaction to three different ways of moving forward with this chapter or this element. One is to make these changes, update this first element, and carry it forth. The first one is to update this information, but then delete this element and incorporate this language throughout the other chapters, like land use, like economic development, housing, and so forth, a shoreline perhaps, so that this is not a standalone element. Another alternative would be to update this and carry it forth as part of the 2013 update and carry it on into the 2015 update as a standalone introductory element. And the last one is to do some revisions at this point, carry it forth, and in 2015 expand it into a broader element that considers, call it environment or sustainability, considers in terms of the entire comp plan, not just the environment or the natural resource, but it considers environmental, economics, and community or quality of life. So it's a broader stage. So I think the commission, after quite a bit of discussion, recommended the first alternative to simply take this information, take the valid and useful information and incorporate it, disperse it throughout the rest of the book. So that quite a bit of this would end up in the land use element that sets the stage for the land resources that we have and the incumbent land uses that come out of that. So what I'm looking for tonight is just some general reactions to the changes that we're proposing so far, knowing that there will be more editing to be done, and the general direction about how we handle this element. This is not a required element, but it's been used in the past as a introduction to the physical aspect of the community. So with that, I'd be happy to hear a little bit of discussion, take some questions. Tell me what you think.
Paul, what was your recommendation to the Planning Commission? And did they accept that? Is that what they accepted? Was your recommendation?
I don't think we made a specific recommendation to the Commission. I preferred either the first or the third. First being that Part of the mission of this comp plan update that we're preparing for is to simplify. Frankly, the plan we have now tends to be kind of verbose and wordy, and a lot of information gets lost because it's just not evident. And one way to address that is to incorporate this in a much briefer form in other places. But I think the advantage of the third alternative, and the second is basically leaving it as is with changes. The third gives a little broader introductory discussion of the community and how the land use, how economic development and housing and so forth should be considered holistically, let's say in terms of environment, ecology, community, to set the tone for the remainder of the comp plan. That gets a little different path. The simplest thing to do, I think, is number one. There's some information here that's useful, but frankly, this element right now is too much information, too much detail. It loses its impact because it has so much detail. Like I say, it is wordy. But as I said, the commission recommended the first alternative.
Okay, council, anything for Paul, excuse me, Councilmember Pettibone.
Thank you, Paul. Can you give me a little bit of history? Because I saw it was amended a couple times, 2004 and 2005. But since this isn't required by the GMA, do you know the history of why including it? There must have been a purpose. We didn't have to do it in the past. Do you know why it was done?
No, not specifically, but you know there are, for smaller cities, a very minimal number of elements that are required. In Monroe's case, other elements that are required, but there are several optional, including the natural environment. I would have to assume that the environmental aspect was seen as a beginning chapter, that this objective being to discuss the land. Before we start talking about land use, changes, development, and so forth, understand what it is that we have, what the land is that we have. And this begins to do that, but it gets bogged down in too much regulatory information, I think, as opposed to finding not only the critical areas or the more areas that should be conserved or preserved, but as well as where's the opportunity, or where are the amenities, what is it about Monroe in its land resources that gives us the ability to do some appropriate and I'll say some really effective land development. And I think it needs to address both sides. And that aspect of it's going to come up more in the land use element. But I don't know how this came about in the first place or how it was reflected in earlier comp plans prior to 2005, the 98 or the late 80s comp plan.
So when I kind of read through it, it gave me a sense of, as you said, the land in the physical areas. And I think that's a good basis to then base decisions on. So I guess my initial thought in reading through it, and I talked to a couple different people, would be not totally getting rid of it. Might be, you know, going through and revising it, updating it, but keeping some element. I like, it kind of sets the stage for the comp plan, so I like that aspect of it. Those are my initial comments right now. Thank you.
I actually prefer number 3 if I had to make a choice strictly from a planning perspective. But depends on how it's structured and how we incorporate discussion of the resources and how we handle those resources in terms of sustainability is a kind of overused word, but in terms of a sustainable, reliable, feasible process for development.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I will respectfully disagree with Councilmember Kovac. We take 22 pages to set the stage, and it just seems to me like that's just a lot of unnecessary text. From what we've talked about, we're trying to streamline this, make it a little bit more in line with what the comp plan should be. It sounds like, in just looking at it, we've got a lot of people's opinions in this where they don't belong, and so I like the approach we're taking. I like streamlining it, I like cleaning it up, getting rid of some of this stuff. We're not required to have that section in there, is that correct?
It's not a required section, that's correct.
And I didn't listen to the deliberations from the Planning Commission, but I'm assuming they discussed it longer than what we were discussing tonight. I see that the vote was 5-1, and so I'm in favor of option number 1, which is pulling it out, but then taking the important pieces and putting them in the sections that they belong in. I think we can say the same thing in a lot less words and then give it more meaning. So,
Councilmember Geary.
I think I would tend to agree with that. I think Planning Commission spent a lot of time on this, a lot more time than we have. They're recommending that. It looks as though the important parts in certain Councilmember Kovac's point of view of what that section does looks like that would be those points would be incorporated into all the sections listed here. And so from in that aspect, we're not, certainly wouldn't be losing anything into makes the document more clear. I agree with Dr. Williams and the continuing with our streamlining and our cleaning the code up. And this one doesn't look like it's a loss at all. It's actually just put into other areas that where it might make a little bit more sense. So I think I'll turn it on.
Councilor Davis.
Yeah, I'm actually involved in producing an assessment that's on a grand scale. And I was reading this thing, there's a lot of good information in there. And what I'm doing in my work is a lot of good information too, but it's way too much information. It becomes counterproductive when there's way too much information. And my thinking was that the first option there, integrating that into other documents instead of being redundant and stacking redundancy upon redundancy, when it just gets too big, it just doesn't get used. And I would, personally, I lose attention very quickly. So my recommendation would be to somehow integrate it into those other documents or requirements, especially if it's not required. In my personal case, that kind of information is being required, and we're all scratching our heads saying, why are we doing this? We're putting hours and hours of work into something that we know is going to get shoved aside and hardly ever looked at. So it would probably be more usable if it was slimmed down and even just integrated into other works where it would work better. So that's my take on that. I look at the first option as probably the best. So.
Thank you, Councilor Hammond.
Yeah, I concur with option number one. Thank
you. Councilmember Gainsey.
So yeah, I tend to lean towards option number one. I guess the only thing that I would personally look for is that, you know, as I look through proposed changes, you know, that are actually being made in the document we're talking about implementing into the other portions, I'm all, you know, for that. I guess I would just look for, you know, because we've all, what's been said across the board is, you know, hey, it's kind of duplication or we're overstating it, but how does that fit into the other? I'd like to see kind of the, you know, the connection, the map, make sure that we're not losing anything as we integrate it back in. I think it's good, you know, to integrate it back in, but I would hate to get, you know, as we go through that process, to lose the best thing about, you know, why this was created, right? And it would be nice to get a little more, you know, more history behind there, but especially sections that are being proposed that are completely eliminated, for me personally, for historical or whatever, just have an understanding of why that's being eliminated. Is it cared for in one of the other, you know, sections that we're integrating it into? And if not, you know, why are we, you know, pulling it completely out? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my comments.
Most of all, which that has been deleted from the body of the text is because it has been either completed or is no longer current or relevant. Like cabinet, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the discussion with cabinet is now history accomplished. I have a little more information on cabinet.
Okay, you have here an agenda outlined as part of the cover sheet beginning on April 22nd. You had the PC workshop.
Yes.
And so next is this evening's discussion. So from here, you're going to continue with workshops. However, the tone of those workshops going forward Really is based on the consensus this evening. It sounds like the majority is the council is stating to move with item number one. So that's kind of the direction that you'll be moving is under the consensus from council this evening to move forward with the first plan.
Right, we'll take, with this direction, we'll take the information from this and incorporate it where it logically fits in these other elements. Frankly, the first element is probably the most work, I think, but it's a good alternative.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. And we'll look forward to the next discussion plan for June 25th.
And actually, that's probably going to be pushed back just a little bit. I'm taking the first 2 weeks of June on vacation, finally.
Well, I don't think we allow that.
Yeah,
we don't allow vacations.
After changing three times, but we'll come back full force in the middle of June with more.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, Diane, review of contract revisions.
On April 17th, there was a disruption to our solid waste service due to a labor issue, and council asked what recourse the city had. And so in your packet, it looks like I have a copy of the contract, and it looks like liquidated damages. The contract's silent on labor issues, so it looks like liquidated damages is the only thing that the contract addresses. So I guess council has any questions or want to do anything.
Councilmember Hampton.
Yes, thank you. Dan, can you just, I'm having a hard time understanding the chart, the spreadsheet down below, the daily rundown on the public service vehicles in Monroe, and how that relates to the number of blocks that were missed.
Oh, okay. The first, on the actions and omissions listed, the first one says per truck per day. And that's why I thought if you wanted to go with that one, you
okay.
need to know the trucks.
Okay.
And the second one is that if you want to go by block, it's, you know, up to council, however you want to look at it, and how you want to do it, or if you want to do it.
Okay, so the spreadsheet with the daily rundown is if we were to count by trucks.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember again.
So just as a reminder from the last time, if we go liquidated damages, essentially you're ending up in court. Because correct?
Not
that was the discussion where it went last time.
Yeah. For liquidated damages, we would do an incident report and invoice Allied for liquidated damages. They have 30 days to appeal it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we go back and forth, and yeah, it could eventually end up in court.
Right. I guess my two cents, I mean, I just kind of stated before, we have an offer on the table. I wholeheartedly agree. I know it's the majority opinion of council. We don't want to support that, you know, type of activity or whatever. But, at the end of the day, the impact to the residents, yes, we had one day that was missed. We ended up being able to contribute more. We're getting something from them. And they, a monetary minimum basically would pay for our group garbage event that we had. We have a recognition from them. It meets the comments from citizens that came and said, hey, we should get something for this. We are getting something for it. And I personally don't, I'm really not up for another, back and forth, in the paper and then into, potentially a courtroom for something that when I do the math does not add up to. That's my personal opinion.
Have we done any calculations on the liquidated damages as compared to what it could be total-wise, comparing that to what they've offered in the $5,000?
No, but I think it would be a lot more.
It would be more liquidated damages.
Yeah, because it's $150 per block. And so you'd have to figure out how many blocks there are in the city, and it says if collected, there were 500 if not collected the following day, and it wasn't. It was collected a week later, so it's $500 per block, so pretty quickly it would add up.
Councilmember Davis?
Well, that was my question. I was wanting clarification. As I read it, it's $500 per block. So the 5,000 that they did, that's 10 blocks. I'm sure it's more than 10 blocks. It's a whole day's worth. I think it would come out considerably higher. And I agree. I don't want to court battle or anything else, but I do want to convey a message that, I understand that they had a problem, but I don't think it's the citizens that have to pay or should pay for it. And it, I guess I would like to see their recognition of that at the very least. I understand their offer of 5,000 is somewhat along those lines, but it's much more serious than that, I think. Because looking at this, we're looking at a lot more money. But on the other hand, some recognition. Because I'm one of those guys that would have complained if I didn't come here. So in a sense, you could add one more to the phone call list if you want to do that. I just don't want to feel like I'm the guy that's got to take the hit on that. It wasn't my fault. I had my garbage out on the curb, like I always do. And it sat there all week long, so I wasn't happy. And I'd just like to convey that message, and I'd like to know that they got the message and would be a little bit wary about doing that again.
Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. I agree with Councilmember, both of the comments that Councilmember Gamble's initial ones. There's a lot of money here. At some point, there's a. We're getting pretty good service. I don't have, other than these types of things, I don't have complaints about Allied. And I think an appropriate time to take this up further would be when the contract comes up, which is in like a year or. 2010 when we did it, right? It was
7 years.
7 years. 7 years. Yeah. Okay, so it's still considering ways up, right? That's a good clarification. That still seems like the right time to do it then. And I appreciate Councilman Davis's point, and certainly I felt that way. I mean, my trash was there, very frustrating. Although, I'm already not thinking about it anymore until it's here. It happened, it's been a couple weeks. But I certainly appreciate the point of saying, this was a bigger deal than $5,000, and I wasn't here the night when that was discussed, but it is. But it's not this big of a deal with the amount that liquidated damage to me, and just the damage to the relationship that would be done. This may be our garbage provider in town for years and years to come. So there's that relationship to think about as well. I would have hoped it could have been more than that, but I don't know that it's necessary to do this. To do something like this to get our point across, but an understanding that they do get it and that it was a real that it sunk. Got recognition of that, but as far as it's a lot of my I think it would end in a court order. So those are my thoughts. Thanks.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I don't think we have enough information here to make that decision yet, because it'd be helpful to have an estimate of what the liquidation damages would be before we make that decision. To me, though, I hear what Councilmember Gearing says, but if I'm Allied, you say, well, we're going to come after you for more unless you acknowledge that it was troublesome to us. Well, sure, I'll give you some token. It was troublesome. But the reality is, for nothing that was in our control, their workers decided to just take the day off and leave our taxpayers, who are their paying customers, with their garbage for an extra week. As somebody that has a baby in the house, that's me storing garbage for an extra week, I don't think that that's, you know, I wouldn't get to let them off the hook to say, well, let's pick up more next week. The fact that lots of people didn't complain, I think is more to do with people are busy, and most people probably thought it wouldn't make a difference anyways. So I guess I would like to see more on what would the liquidated damages be, and, you know, what's that number before I would say whether or not we should let them off the hook. Because we can always come up and say, maybe the number is $25,000, I have no idea. But to go back to them and say, here's what the contract says we can do, your $5,000 is short, we need to meet somewhere in the middle, as opposed to just taking it and saying, let's address it in the next contract. Because to me, what's going to happen is the next time their drivers decide to take a day off, because there's a strike in Timbuktu, Mineral is going to be an easy place to do it, because we didn't really make that big of a fuss about it. I'm also concerned about, are the other aspects of this contract being honored? You know, we've had very little visibility as a council since the contract was put in place as to, have there been annual rate increases? What have those been? Are they doing the, you know, sending us the review and writing, explaining what those increases are, like the contract states? And, you know, so maybe it's time to look at some of those other things too. I do agree that their service has been good, but this kind of stuff just burns me when they just decide to say, hey, we'll make our point, because no one likes to sit there on their garbage for an extra week. And you know, to me, Allied's $5,000 is a token, you know, shut up and go away, here's $5,000. They say they made more than that on the fact they didn't pay wages for that day. So I would like to get a little more information as to what those damages would be and then make that decision.
Yeah, I can find out. I can have engineering calculate how many blocks we have and figure it, and then, you know, multiply by 500. As far as the rest of the contract, they are compliant. I get monthly reports on the tonnage disposal and everything. They send me monthly reports. We meet at least quarterly with their supervisor staff, with Jeremiah Jones and Wes Smith, just to touch base on customer service issues and everything. We are in constant contact with
them. And is it a fair assessment that our rates has gone up every year since
yes.
the contract?
Yes.
Well, there's a surprise. You know, we have a contract that had 7 or 8 mechanisms to increase the price, and sure enough, the price has been increasing. It just, it, to me, it's bad service on their part to deny us a day of service and say we'll pick it up next week, and here's a token $5,000, and we're spending the amount of money with them that we are, and it goes up every year, and I'll make a prediction that it'll go up next year and the year after that as well. So I just, you know, I appreciate the comments, but to me, this is as important to me as addresses are at Councilmember Gearing. Thank you.
You respectfully consider my position as I am yours.
All right. Councilman Hammer.
I completely concur with Councilor Williams. Not about the Gearing comments. Everything else. You know, I had several people complain to me in person, and so the note here says 5 people called, but I know I had probably 3 at least talked to me in person. So I don't think this was just a minor detail for the city, and I'd like to see the bottom line come so we can compare, and hopefully settle on a much larger sum. Thank you.
To your point, I probably received, in fact, I know that this is true, I received more calls with regards to garbage in one day than I did with regards to Walmart. I let the management staff at Allied Waste know that after hearing of the $5,000 offer, I returned or provided that information to many of the individuals who called me, and all of them were satisfied with that, the recognition that something had been done, and the fact that a few of them put out 4 times the amount of garbage. completely appreciate the passion which you have regarding this this incident, and a couple of heads nodded as well when you asked the question for Diane to bring back that information, and so we will have her do that. Councilmember Campbell.
Thank you. While I agree with your position, I would like more information so we can make at least have a good vision of what the responsibilities were and what the impact could have been. However, I'd be hard-pressed to look far enough ahead and say that it would be worth the experience of dealing with court for this event. At the very least, if they're going to offer us a token value and the amount would be considerably higher, this may be a good warning shot across the bow that if something similar were to happen in the near future, that we may not be as agreeable to it. So I would, as with Councilmember Williams, I would like to see just a comparison and know how many blocks were affected and how it would be impacted by this. Thank you.
Councilmember Hammer.
Thank you. I forgot to mention also to Councilmember Davis's point that they pretty much own up to this event. And I was thinking back to when this first happened, and it seemed like Diane, when you presented, or maybe it was Brad, I don't remember, but the thought, the words like inclement weather and those kind of terms came up, and I remember thinking, what does that have to do with the garbage not being emptied because of a union strike? And so I don't think the feeling that I got, and probably you as well, was that they were sorry it happened, here's 5,000. Not you know, we take total responsibility and we're really sorry that it happened and we'll do whatever we can to make sure it doesn't happen again. That was the feeling I got. And so I think that's what would be nice is if they, you know, were able to acknowledge it.
Yeah, they the inclement weather part had to do with what Ally chose to do is because there was no clause in the contract about labor issues, they fell back on the inclement weather policy in the contract.
That was in an email, wasn't it? I think...
Could have been.
I think it's coming back to me now. That was in an email, and I remember... Yes.
Just so. So this information that we have here about the block ratio of $500 per block, is that part of the inclement weather?
No.
This is just...
No, the inclement weather policy says that if due to inclement weather they cannot do the garbage, then garbage will be held and just put out double snip the next week.
Okay, which makes sense. But this piece that we're looking at, the section shows, is just if they miss for whatever reason, then of course we have to a definition of whether or not inclement weather would be the actual reason.
Yeah, because it says excluding inclement weather.
Okay, so we all... Okay.
So we're saying it's not inclement weather, it's missing service.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Gamble.
So, you know, to Councilmember Williams, your comments, you know, absolutely more information if we get a dollar amount, you know, that would be great. I'm kind of, you know, maybe going off of past attorney's fees and all that kind of stuff and quickly adding, you know, in my head. But I think the other thing that would be useful is that I am noticing the liquidated damages thing from the contract is a 4.1. Be interested to see how it is in the context of the actual, you know, the 4.0, where it is in the contract. Because is this just pulled? Is this the line item?
Yeah, right from the contract? You have the contract.
Oh, I missed it. Okay. Well, then I will look at that one. But with the numbers, and then, you know, the one thing I can't remember is that I thought I recalled them saying that it wouldn't fall under liquidated damages. What I'm hearing you say right there is they're falling back to inclement weather. So they're asserting that they are not in violation of the contract and that it does not fall under liquidated damages. Or did we not assert that they're in violation of the contract? I guess is my question.
We have not asserted to them at all that they're in violation of the contract.
Okay, well then that's different. If we have not asserted that they're in violation of contract, that's different than, because I thought that's basically what we were saying, is that
exactly.
We're asserting that we're in violation of contract and that $5,000 is not enough. And I thought the response was, we're not going to do any more, and then they're asserting they're not in violation of contract. So maybe that misunderstanding is on me.
Okay. You for a moment.
Yes.
It doesn't talk about anywhere here that I can see that this goes to court. It says that we bill them for the damages and they have a time to respond and offer something else up. So
no, I just, when, again, I'm assuming that we made the assertion and they basically are saying, no, we're not in violation of contract. They're going to argue a part of the contract. Yeah, that's where that's where it goes. So that's where my logic was going. So that's my error. So thank you for the clarification. So yes, in agreement, I would like to see. Well, I think in that way before we can actually go back to them with that dollar amount, as opposed to just saying we want more.
I think that I asserted quite clearly that they were out of compliance in the sense that the garbage was not picked up as scheduled. The explanation was that the union had taken this action, not the company. And as a result, they were unable to pick up their fallback, I believe, on the inclement weather rule was a way of still providing the service similar to what the inclement weather rule. I don't think they didn't communicate to me. I don't believe they communicated to Diana. That was their position that they felt that's where they were, right. It seemed to work for inclement weather, and they thought it would work, for this scenario as well. To Councilmember Hanford's point, in terms of seeking an apology, I guess the question I have to ask is, who apologizes, the company or the union? Because this wasn't the company's decision to cease or not to pick up; it was the union's decision. So with that said, are we penalizing the company for the union's action by seeking liquidated damages, or really that we are because we have no recourse against union action?
Well, the contract is with
Allied,
the business, so that's where, in my opinion. And I think it's still on the floor, and I
do
the same thing in my ear. It's been for David, so.
Understood.
And I guess the only thing I would throw in there, Mr. Brain, is that I've been in those circumstances, and I went to work on the front lines to provide the service the best we could when those labor decisions were made.
I've been there too, so.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, yes, from the company, we have a contract with the company.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, Boeing as an example, when the union goes on strike and slows business down, and they're not being able to provide the airplanes for the customers, you can bet that Boeing is discounting things and doing whatever they can to keep the customers happy. It's not Boeing's fault, necessarily. The union's the one that's on strike, but that's an incentive for Boeing not to, for the two to come together. And so that's a much grander scale, but it just shows you that I know that Boeing discounts to their customers, and it's an incentive to keep the union happy and work together. So.
Okay. Well, I think that we will have. Can we have that information back by next week?
Oh yeah,
yes.
Okay. Then we'll plan on that and continue the discussion then. Okay, we are on to department reports. I'll start actually with the city council. If the council has anything to report this evening, I'm just going to throw out if you like. If not, we'll move on to staff. Jeff, you had enough to say tonight, so I'm going to skip you. Scott, anything to report this evening?
I just want to give updates on our projects. The Highway 2 Main Street project's underway. In case you could help, it knows all the barrels. Yeah, I can go home tonight that way. We'll probably see contractors out there. They work mostly at night. See that this project, in all likelihood, takes somewhere into the early part of June before we're wrapping up with substantial completion. Fremont Street Reconstruction. We're working on a pre-construction meeting in probably not this coming week, but or sometime next week, as well as the Powell Street sidewalk. So those both of those projects will begin construction in June. Get rolling on that. Our engineering staff is working on the contracts and plans for prepping the area for the Rotary Field Miracle League restroom. We're also working with CXT, finalizing the design. I believe their design is off to L&I, who is the inspection agency to approve their building, after which they'll enter their production line, if you will. And current forecast would be that, I'll put an asterisk by it, but probably late June, early July, that they might have their building fabricated out for us. There can always be delays with L&I or reviews and stuff, but that's the current status of the Rotary Field Miracle League project. Otherwise, yes, staff's getting busy with construction season, if you will. We're bouncing all about.
Great, thank you. Diane, anything to report?
No, nothing to report.
Right. Chief, you've been hiding in that corner all night tonight, but you're not getting away here. Anything? All right. Paul, anything further?
Yes, I didn't have a chance to do a written report. I want to share a few things. Melissa, our planner, is now in what, her third week, took a national exam last week for American Institute of Certified Planners and passed. Quite a great professional step for her. We've been busy. We've had a couple of pre-development applications. One was for a potential mixed-use building on West Main. Housing Hope has a project just east of Precision Collision, and this property is the next property to the east for a perhaps a combination residential and commercial building. Also had another session with Jerry Senna with the Western Heritage Museum. He and the county are working together. They're going to actually do some great improvements, and I think Jerry is busy raising funds for a much expanded museum. Subdivision Eaglemont is they're clearing. They've begun construction up off Chain Lake. That's the 150 lot subdivision. Bear Mountain Estates, which is just west of the foothills, is bringing in some new plans, and they have extended their expanded their subdivision to the west to hook into Roosevelt Road. And that and Chain Lake Estates, which Rick is involved with, up on the former Harris property up on Chain Lake that had the assisted living proposals, 26 lots or anything, and they're both on track to get to the hearing examiner for a public hearing in the next several weeks. It's been very busy. Blueberry, Pete's Party Pit. That property is coming around again. They've got some grading plans submitted, and I think we're headed for a development project finally on that piece north of Blueberry, between Blueberry and the railroad. A couple others. Housing Hope on Fremont is finished, completed. Nice little project for Fremont, and we actually begin some responses, some interest from neighboring landowners with the Fremont project. When they start tearing that street up, I think it'll really spark some interest.
And we've gotten some plans submitted for the, so several months ago, a year ago, we met with folks about the Puget Sound Kidney Center on the southeast corner of the hospital. They've got that plant in. And lastly, fair amount of building projects. We're continuing to work with Providence on the office building. It's coming along great. Natural Factors is doing a tremendous amount of work in their building and moving very quickly. And a lot of things going on, a lot of activity up there. So we're busy, and that's good.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Student Representative Haram, how are you doing?
Good to have you back.
How was the season?
We didn't get one. Or actually, I'll take that back. This past Thursday, we won our first official season game. So, it was a good one for the team, good one for the club. So,
great.
It was a good season.
Good.
Yep.
Anything else to report for us? Been a while, so you got to have something. Put you on the spot.
No, I do want to apologize for not being here the past couple of weeks. 2 weeks ago, I had a lacrosse game, and this past Tuesday, my house was actually broken into, so I had to stay home and allow the door replacement man to come in and help us out. So that is why I've been absent of late, but glad to be back.
Good. No, we're glad to have you back, and I did share. Not the reasons for you being out, but the fact that you had, written me an email and my response to you. We totally understand life happens, and so does something called lacrosse. And so, I can only say that because my son didn't play this year, so I can join Councilmember Gamble in our love for baseball and not be divided in my home. So. But we do appreciate the fact that you're back, and welcome, and look forward to you completing. Graduation is
June 8th.
Have we decided to? Have you guys talked as to what might be the plan? Year? We'll talk offline. We'll talk offline. All right, well, very good. Okay, then, we're going to look at our draft agenda. I'm just going to throw this out. We know what we are going to add, the subject matter related to the Allied Waste contract for next week, but anything else that you'd like to see either next week or long term, Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. For June 4th, many of us, I think we all received the Stan Meadows Homeowners Association letter. One of the very first things I did when I moved here in 1998 was ask for speed bumps. And there's kind of been a city policy, at least as I've understood it from Brad, that there's actually liability with doing it because the car can get damaged. And my thinking is, well, if you're going 25 or under over the speed bump, you won't get damaged in your car. And also, how is that the city's fault that you raced over a speed bump and damaged your car? But apparently it could be. But a discussion with regard to that, because, this is a well-drawn-out plan, and while everything may not be feasible, it would certainly be nice to address these and understand the speed bump policy. I know there's lots of neighborhoods in town which might like to talk about that and maybe like to implement that. I know other cities do. Kirkland has some in their neighborhoods, and quite frankly, I've driven over those. They slow you down. That's just the bottom line. It serves that intended purpose. So anyway, I think Brian will be back on June 4th. It'd be good to have some input. I'd love to see that. That speed bump discussion, make sure that these people have taken their time to put this stuff together. That was really well done. I certainly appreciate their safety concerns. There's some other things to discuss as well. So if we do that, at least maybe June 4th, that'd be great.
Can we move that to June 11th? Give Brad a couple days to come back and
I don't know exactly when he's back. So.
Yeah, end of the month.
He's back on the 28th.
Okay.
Day after tomorrow.
And maybe if we could maybe respond to them and let them know that we're going to discuss it on June 11th, that'd be great, so that they can come and express their urge as well. But having that back, just the backstory of why do we not do speed bumps? Because to me, they still make sense. I know they can cost one, but let's be great. You know, we can discuss it.
Edie, do you have a copy of that letter?
My new thing, that
as a letter that council, Councilmember Green, can I ask that to provide a copy of the letter to Edie? I don't know that.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm not.
If you'll yield, we have got the letter plus Gene's response to the to them at my request. So I'm just going to have him make copies.
I responded. I didn't get a response back from them yet, but I did let them know that I got this.
Okay,
you're fast.
We'll let Councilmember Camp provide you with the copies, including Gene's response. Mercer Island also has speed bumps, I found out.
What's that?
I also found out that Mercer Island has speed bumps. Now one of the roads. Councilmember Gamble.
The councilman, of course, forgot that, just a reminder, next week I will be on business out of town. I think it's on there. Okay. But the other thing, we're talking about bringing up the garbage back next week. I apologize, I completely missed the body of the contract. The one thing, I was reading it as we were sitting here, and it does have specific information, so when we do bring this back on the incident report, and I just, as I read through there, you know, did we submit an incident report on that?
One, no, we have not.
Is there time limits on that? Because there could, the way that I read the language, it could be construed that there are time limits in regards to that. I would see
that there are time limits.
Well, it said in the Shelby invoice books or during a given month. So I guess that's all I'm saying is when it comes back, it's the kind of the context around that, because it's clearly spelled out on how we go about, you know, notifying them and doing that. Invoicing it in the contract language. I would have that ahead of time.
Okay.
I completely missed it. So just that piece.
Did I hear both you be gone next week?
That's correct.
So if I understand right, I think that what Councilmember Gamble's brought up is a good point, that I think that we should probably notify them of the intent to proceed with some type of liquidated damage.
Okay.
And that, I think with that said, being that the two of you will be gone next week, would you prefer to have that conversation when you're here or when you're not here?
I would prefer to have one here.
No, then,
I figured that's why I wanted to bring it.
Yeah. So I apologize. I knew you guys were both going out, but I couldn't recall when. So we'll plan on having that discussion the following week, but Diane, let's review the contract language and make sure that this month we are informing Allied of, or informing them of council's intention to potentially pursue liquidated damages.
Because then we should get, I mean, the way I read it, they got 24 hours to respond. We should get a formalized response, all that, and have that part of our discussion.
Councilman Hamburg.
And it would sound like we need to make sure we're going to get an incident report filed within that month period or whatever.
Well, that was my question on the side, because it doesn't specifically say, it just said liquidated damages, if assessed during a given month, shall be invoiced by the city to the contractor. So I guess the only question is do you have to submit the incident during the month that the incident occurred? And would you have to do that and then levy the liquidated? Okay, that would be, maybe it's more of a question for Attorney Lowell to briefly look at.
Okay, yeah, I'll ask Zach to take a look at it too.
And then submit that.
Yeah, because that could be hot. Report. That could be extremely hot.
So that's, if it does come down to that, then that some action has to be taken within the month in which that passed. Did it happen this month?
April 17th. So if you have a month to respond, then that will be May 17th.
So we have this week.
So we've got this week.
That's, yeah.
Today is the 14th.
14th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we'll have, it seems to me that language would be a month, would be 30 days or 31 days, so. Okay, we'll check with Zach on that as well.
Yeah.
And get that notice out for them.
Okay.
Thank you. That's where we're going.
Nope.
All right. Anything else from council with regards to the agenda? No? Okay, we are adjourned then.